Chapter 4. Moore had already commandeered a table at the Riverfront Cafe, an arm slung across the back of a wrought iron chair, the other elegantly draped over her crossed knees. Cassian halted a few feet from the maze of tables along the walkway, smiling to himself at the sight of her, head tipped toward the sun, unbound hair gleaming and rippling around her like liquid gold, her full lips curled upward, basking in the light. She never stopped appreciating the sunshine. Even 500 years after leaving that veritable prison she'd called home, and the monsters who claimed her as kin, his friend, his sister, honestly, still savored every moment in the sun, as if the first 17 years of her life, spent in the darkness of the hewn city, still lurked around her like Az's shadows. Cassian cleared his throat as he approached the table, offering pleasant smiles to the other patrons and people along the walkway, who either gawked or waved at him, and by the time he sat, Moore was already smirking, her brown eyes lit with amusement.
"Don't start," he warned,
settling his wings around the chair's back and motioning to the owner of the cafe, who knew him well enough to understand that meant he wanted water. No tea or sweets, both of which Moore had before her. Moore grinned, so beautiful it took his breath away. "Can't I enjoy the sight of my friend being fawned over by the public?" He rolled his eyes and murmured his thanks to the owner as a pitcher of water and a glass appeared before him. Moore said, when the owner had gone to tend to other tables, "I seem to remember a time when you enjoyed that sort of thing, too."
"I was a young, arrogant idiot."
He cringed to recall how he'd strutted around after successful battles or missions, believing he deserved the praise of strangers. For too damn long he'd indulged in that bullshit. It had taken walking these same streets after Rhys had been imprisoned by Amarantha, after Rhys sacrificed so much to shield this city, and seeing the disappointment and fear in so many faces, to make Cassian realize what a fool he'd been. Moore cleared her throat, as if sensing the direction of his thoughts. She didn't possess Rhys's skill set, but having survived in the Court of Nightmares, she'd learned to read the subtlest of expressions. A mere blink, she'd once told him, might mean the difference between life and death in that miserable court.
"She's settled, then?"
Cassian knew who she meant.
"Taking a nap."
Moore snorted.
"Don't."
His attention drifting to the glittering Sidra mere feet away.
"Please don't."
Moore sipped her tea, the portrait of elegant innocence.
"We'd be better off throwing Nesta into the Court of Nightmares. She'd thrive there."
Cassian clenched his jaw, both at the insult and the truth.
"That's exactly the sort of existence we're trying to steer her away from."
Moore assessed him with a bob of her thick lashes.
"It pains you seeing her like this."
"All of it pains me."
He and Moore had always had this kind of relationship, truth at all costs, however harsh. Ever since that first and only time they'd slept together, when he'd learned too late that she'd hidden from him the terrible repercussions, when he'd seen her broken body and known that even if she'd lied to him, he'd still played a part. Cassian blew out a breath, shaking away the blood-soaked memory still straining his mind 5 centuries later.
"It pains me that Nesta has become this. It pains me that she and Feyre are always at each other's throats. It pains me that Feyre hurts over it. And I know Nesta does, too. It pains me that..."
He drummed his fingers on the table, then sipped from his water.
"I really don't want to talk about it."
"All right."
The breeze ruffled the gauzy fabric of Moore's twilight blue dress. He again let himself admire her perfect face. Beyond the disastrous consequences for Moore after their night together, the fallout with Rhys afterward had been awful, and Azriel had been so furious in his own quiet way that Cassian had quelled any further desire for Moore. Had let lust turn into affection,
and all romantic feelings turn into familial bonds. But he could still admire her sheer beauty, as he'd admire any work of art, even though he knew well that what lay inside Moore was far more lovely and perfect than her exterior. He wondered if she knew that. Drinking again, he said, "Tell me what happened in Balahan." The ancient, mountainous fairy territory across the northern sea had been stirring since before the war with Hybern, and had been both enemy and ally to Prithian in different historical eras. What role Valahan's hot-tempered king and proud people would play in this new world of theirs was yet to be decided, though much of its fate seemed to depend upon Moore's now frequent presence at their court as Rhys's emissary. Indeed, Moore's eyes shuddered. "They don't want to sign the new treaty." Fuck! Rhys, Feyre, and Amran had spent months working on that treaty, with input from their allies in other courts and territories. Helion, High Lord of the Day Court, and Rhys's closest ally, had been the most involved. Helion Spellcleaver was unrivaled in sheer swaggering arrogance. He'd probably made up the moniker himself, but the male had 1,000 libraries at his disposal and had put them all to good use for the treaty. "I've spent weeks in that blasted court," Moore said, poking at the flaky pastry beside her teacup. "Freezing my ass off, trying to kiss their cold asses, and their king and queen refused the treaty. I came home on the earlier side today because I knew any more last-minute pushing from me would be unwelcome. My time there was supposed to be a friendly visit, after all." "Why won't they sign it?" "Because those stupid human queens are stirring. Their army still isn't disbanded. The Queen of Valahan even asked me what the point of a peace treaty would be when another war, this time against the humans, might redraw the territory lines far below the wall. I don't think Valahan is interested in peace or allying with us."
"So Valahan wants another war in order to add to their territory?"
"They'd already seized more than their fair share after the war 500 years ago." "They're bored," Moore said, frowning with distaste. "And the humans, despite those queens, are far weaker than we are. Pushing into human lands is low-hanging fruit. Montessere and Rask are likely thinking the same thing." Cassian groaned skyward. That had been the fear during the recent war, that those three territories across the sea might ally with Hybern. Had they, there would have been no chance at all of survival. Now, even with Hybern's king dead, its people remained angry. An army might be raised again in Hybern, and if it united with Valahan, if Montessere and Rask joined with the goal of claiming more territory from the humans.
"You already told Rhys this."
It wasn't a question, but Moore nodded. "That's why he's asking you to look into what's going on with the human queens. I'm taking a few days off before I head back to Valahan. But Rhys needs to know where the human queens stand in all of this."
"So you're supposed to convince Valahan not to start another war, and I'm supposed to convince the human queens not to do so either?"
"You won't get near the human queens," Moore said frankly. "But from what I observed in Valahan, I know they're up to something, planning something. We just can't figure out what, or why the humans would be stupid enough to start a war they cannot win."
"They'd need something in their arsenal that could grant them the advantage."
"That's what you have to find out." Cassian tapped his booted foot on the stones of the walkway.
"No pressure."
Moore drained her tea. "Playing courtier isn't all nice clothes and fancy parties." He scowled. Long moments passed in amiable silence, though Cassian half heard the wind whispering over the sidra, the merry chatter of the people around them, the clink of silverware against plates. Content to let him think, Moore returned to her sunning.
Cassian straightened. There's one person who knows those queens inside and out, who can offer some insight.
Moore opened an eye, then slowly sat forward, her hair falling around her like a rippling golden river.
Oh? Vasa.
Cassian hadn't dealt much with the ousted human queen, the only good one out of the surviving group who'd been betrayed by her fellow queens when they'd sold her to a sorcerer lord who'd cursed her to be a firebird by day, woman by night. She'd been lucky. They'd given the other rebellious queen in their midst to Adder, who had impaled her on a lamppost a few bridges away from where Cassian and Moore now sat.
Moore nodded. She might be able to help.
He leaned his arms on the table.
Lucian is living with Vasa, and Jurian. He's supposed to be our emissary to the human lands. Let him deal with it.
Moore took another bite from her pastry.
Lucian can't be entirely trusted anymore.
Cassian started.
What?
Even with Elaine here, he's become close with Jurian and Vasa. He's voluntarily living with them these days, and not just as an emissary, as their friend. Cassian went over all he'd heard and observed from his encounters with Lucian since the war, trying to contemplate it like Rhys and Moore would.
He's spent months helping them sort out the politics of who rules Prithian's slice of the human lands,
Cassian said slowly.
So Lucian can't be unbiased in reporting to us on Vasa.
Moore nodded gravely.
Lucian might mean well, but any reports would be skewed, even if he isn't aware of it, in their favor. We need someone outside of their little bubble to collect information and report.
She finished off her pastry.
Which would be you?
Fine, that made sense. Why haven't we already contacted Vasa about this?
Moore waved a hand, though her shadowed eyes belied her casual gesture.
Because we're just now piecing it all together. But you should definitely speak with her when you can. As soon as you can, actually.
Cassian nodded. He didn't dislike Vasa, though meeting her would also entail talking with Lucian and Jurian. The former he'd learned to live with, but the latter? It didn't matter that it turned out that Jurian had been fighting on their side, that the human general who'd been Amarantha's tortured prisoner for 5 centuries had played Hybern after being rebirthed by the Cauldron and had helped Cassian and his family win the war. Cassian still didn't like the man. He rose, leaning to ruffle Moore's shining hair.
I miss you these days.
She'd been away frequently lately, and each time she returned, a shadow he couldn't place dimmed her eyes.
You know we'd warn you if Kyr ever came here.
Her asshole of a father still hadn't called in his favor with Rhys to visit Velaris. Eris bought me time. Her words were laced with acid. Cassian had tried not to believe it, but he knew Eris had done it as a gesture of good faith. He'd invited Rhysand into his mind to see exactly why he'd convinced Kyr to indefinitely delay his visit to Velaris. Only Eris had that sort of sway with the power-hungry Kyr, and whatever Eris had offered Kyr in exchange for not coming here was still a mystery, at least to Cassian. Rhys probably knew. From Moore's pale face, he wondered if she knew, too. Eris must have sacrificed something big to spare Moore from her father's visit, which would have likely been timed for a moment that would maximize tormenting her.
It doesn't matter to me.
Moore waved off the conversation with a flip of her hand. He could tell something else was eating at her, but she'd let him in when she was ready. Cassian walked around the table and pressed a kiss to the top of her head.
Get some rest.
He shot skyward before she could answer. Nesta woke to pure darkness. Darkness that she had not witnessed in years now, since that ramshackle cottage that had become a prison and a hell.
Jolting upright, hands clutching at her chest, she gasped for air. Had it been some fever dream on a winter's night? She was still in that cottage, still starving and poor and desperate. No, the air in the room was toasty, and she was the lone person in the bed, not clinging to her sisters for warmth, always squabbling over who got the coveted middle place in the bed on the coldest nights, or the edges on the hottest summer ones. And though she'd become as bony as she'd been during those long winters, this body was new, too. Fey, powerful. Or it had once been. Scrubbing at her face, Nesta slid from the bed. The floors were warmed, not the icy wooden planks in the cottage. Padding to the window, she drew back the drapes and peered out at the darkened city below. Golden lights shone along the streets, dancing in the twining band of the Sidra. Beyond that, only starlight silvered the lowlands before the cold and empty sea. A scan of the sky revealed nothing regarding how far off dawn might be. And a long moment of listening suggested the household remained asleep. All three of them who occupied it. How long had she slept? They'd arrived by 11 in the morning, and she'd fallen asleep soon after that. She'd consumed absolutely nothing all day. Her stomach grumbled, but she ignored it, leaning her brow against the cool glass of the window. She let the starlight gently brush her head, her face, her neck. Imagined it running its shimmering fingers down her cheek, as her mother had done for her and her alone. My Nesta, Elaine shall wed for love and beauty. But you, my cunning little queen, you shall wed for conquest. Her mother would thrash in her grave to know that years later, her Nesta had come dangerously close to marrying a weak-willed woodcutter's son, who had sat idly by while his father beat his mother, who had put his hands on her when she called things off between them, who had then attempted to take what she hadn't offered. Nesta had tried to forget Thomas. She often found herself wishing the cauldron had ripped those memories away, just as it had her humanity. But his face sometimes sullied her dreams, her waking thoughts. Sometimes she could still feel his rough hands pawing at her, bruising her. Sometimes the coppery tang of his blood still coated her tongue. Pulling back from the window, Nesta studied those distant stars again, half wondered if they might speak. My Nesta, her mother had always called her, even on her deathbed. So wasted and pale from typhus. My little queen. Nesta had once delighted in the title, had done her best to fulfill its promise, indulging in a dazzling life that had melted away as soon as the debtors swept in, and all her so-called friends had revealed themselves to be nothing more than envious cowards wearing smiling masks. Not one of them had offered to help save the Archeron family from poverty. They had thrown them all, mere children and a crumbling man, to the wolves. Nesta had become a wolf, armed herself with invisible teeth and claws, and learned to strike faster, deeper, more lethally, had relished it. But when the time came to put away the wolf, she'd found it had devoured her, too. The stars flickered above the city, as if blinking their agreement. Nesta curled her hands into fists and climbed back into bed. Cauldron, damn him. Maybe he shouldn't have agreed to bring her here. Cassian lay awake in his behemoth of a bed, large enough for three Illyrian warriors to sleep side by side, wings and all. Little in the room itself had changed in the past 500 years. Mor occasionally groused about wanting to redecorate the House of Wind, but he liked this room how it was. He'd awoken at the sound of a door shutting and been instantly alert, heart hammering as he pulled free the knife he kept on the nightstand. Two more were hidden under his mattress, another set above the doorway, and two swords lay beneath the bed and in the dresser drawer, respectively. That was just his collection. The mother knew what Az had stored in his own room. He supposed that between him, Az, Moore, and Rhys, in the 5 centuries they'd used the House of Wind, they had filled it with enough weapons to arm a small legion. They'd hidden and stashed and forgotten about so many of them that there was always a good chance of sitting on a couch and being poked in the ass by something. And a good chance that most of the weapons were now little more than rust in their sheaths. But the ones he kept in this bedroom, those he kept oiled and clean, ready. The knife gleamed in the starlight, his siphons fluttering with red light as his power scanned the hall beyond the door. But no threat emerged, no enemy breaching the new wards. Hybern's soldiers had broken through more than a year ago, nearly getting their hands on Feyre and Nesta in the library. He hadn't forgotten it, that terror on Nesta's face as she'd raced for him, arms outstretched. But the sound in the hall? Azriel, he'd realized a heartbeat later. That he'd heard the door at all told him Az wanted him aware of his return. Hadn't wanted to talk, but had wanted Cassian to know that he was around, which had left Cassian here, staring at the ceiling, his siphons slumbering once more, and knife again sheathed and set on the nightstand. From the star's position, he knew it was past 3. Dawn was still far off. He should get some sleep. Tomorrow would be hard enough. As if his silent plea had gone out to the world, a smooth male voice purred into his mind. "Why are you up so late?" Cassian scanned the sky beyond the wall of windows as if he'd see Rhys flying there.
"I have the same question for you."
Rhys chuckled.
"I told you. I had some apologizing to do with my mate."
A long, wicked pause.
"We're taking a break."
Cassian laughed.
"Let the poor female sleep. She was the one who initiated this round."
Pure male satisfaction edged every word.
"You still didn't answer my question. Why are you snooping on me at this hour?" "I wanted to make sure all was well. It's not my fault you were already up."
Cassian let out a soft groan.
"It's fine. Nesta went to sleep right after we got here and stayed in bed. I'm assuming she's still asleep." "You got there before 11.
"I know.
It's 3:15 in the morning."
"I know." The silence was pointed enough that Cassian added,
"Don't butt in." "I wouldn't dream of it."
Cassian didn't particularly want to have this conversation. Not at 3 in the morning, and certainly not twice in one day.
"I'll check in tomorrow night with an update on the first lesson."
Rhys's pause was again too pointed to ignore. But his brother said,
"Moore will bring you up to Windhaven." "Good night, Cass."
The dark presence in his mind faded, leaving him hollow and chilled. Tomorrow would be a battlefield unlike any other he'd walked onto. Cassian wondered how much of him would be left intact by the end of it.